I'm going to ask now the children, Michael and Jade, are going to be speaking, and then I will say a few words that I need to say. So I would like to ask Michael, please come forward, pay tribute to your mom.
On behalf of our family, we want to thank each of you for being here today. We are very lucky to have such a close-knit community where we are surrounded by so much love and support during this very tragic week. Because honestly, we need you. You have been here for us by our sides, calling, emailing, visiting our dad, cooking, bringing mountains of food nonstop since mom passed. Can't say enough. We couldn't make it through this time without you. Words can't describe the feelings of grief, loss, and anger. We are all so focused about what has happened, so confused about what has happened, sorry. My mom was the epitome of good health and someone who was exceptionally in tune with her body. Seeing doctors regularly, eating healthily, playing tennis 3 times a week, her death leaves us utterly mystified. My mom was my best friend. We spoke almost every day about how things were going at home, with my dad, at work, and everything in between. She was the one I went to for advice and for comforting. She always expressed her appreciation for what I did to help her and my dad. She never wanted to burden me. She confided in me and asked my advice and opinions on everything, from big life decisions to which remote to use on the television. She supported all my choices and was always a strong presence in my life. A few years ago, I realized life was short with my parents, and as they were aging, I made a commitment to spend as much quality time with them as I could. And even though they always told me they were doing fine, not to worry about them, we still saw them every week for dinners, get-togethers, or just a visit on the couch. We enjoyed this precious time together, and she loved my company and being with Michelle and I and the kids. She adored Michelle, who was like a daughter to her. The end of every visit, it would end with a hug and a kiss and saying, "I love you." When I was young, I was a mama's boy. I remember sitting beside her while she was talking on the phone with a friend, and she would stroke my head with her hand and brought me such comfort. She babied me because I was the baby. When it came to me, she had a soft spot, always gentle and kind. From bar mitzvahs and camp to new schools and sleepovers, I would hang on to my mom's leg, begging her not to leave me. Now when I drop my own kids off at camp, people ask if I ever went to camp. "Are you kidding?" I would say. I couldn't leave my mom's side. And now she's left mine.
Jay's anecdote is a perfect lead-in to the last conversation I had with my mom. It was just a couple days before she passed away. We had signed up our son Simon, who was 7 years old, for a week-long mountain biking day camp. And after 2 days of being there, he was in absolute hysterics about not wanting to go back. I was trying to teach him a little grit and told him he's got to tough it out, but I really wasn't sure what to do, so I called my mom. She paused and then sort of chuckled a bit and said, and you can kind of hear her voice, "Oh, for goodness sake, it's not that important. Let him stay home for if he wants." and we did, and of course she was right. And this perfectly illustrates my relationship with my mom. She always understood the big picture, the long game, while she often just watched me sweat small stuff. And she knew how to convey that advice simply and directly. It's a gift she gave me countless times throughout the years, especially my relationships. When I was in my 20s, I was always terrified to bring girlfriends around my mom. Her stamp of approval was important to me, and when she felt my choice was a bad fit, I protested. Sure, she was wrong. But in the end, though I'm a little chagrined to admit it, she often knew me better than I knew myself. And now with my wife, Ashley, she gave her the good housekeeping seal of approval. See, it's you on that. Moms in general can be a little overbearing with their opinions and judgments, but my mom, while she definitely wanted to have her say, she always knew when to hold back, when to let me make my own decisions about life. Even if she had a hunch they weren't the wisest choices, she knew when to let me make my mistakes on my own to cultivate my independence and self-reliance. And that self-reliance also gave me confidence to feel that I could do anything, try anything, and can handle whatever the outcome. My mom, albeit reluctantly, supported me when I wanted to take mountaineering lessons so I could climb Mount Rainier. She also championed my interests no matter how far-fetched. I wasn't a big team sports guy. I never enjoyed regular things like kids my age did. I didn't like basketball or soccer or baseball. So when I wanted to learn oil painting or pottery or model rocketry and ultimately skiing, now my lifelong passion, she didn't hesitate to find the right classes or coaches and get me involved right away. The same goes for my career. Mom knew that journalism wasn't exactly a lucrative profession, and that it was also risky and competitive and very difficult to become successful in. But when I wanted to apply to graduate school, she was right there, helping me fill out the applications, write the essays, and never for a second doubting that I would get into the top school. When I published my first story in the New York Times, she told me, "I always said you could do it," like as if she knew all along. As most of you know, Mom was a worrier. Which is okay, because that is the job of Jewish mothers. But now that I have my own children, I'm finally realizing the hell I put her through. Climbing mountains, traveling around the world for a year to far-flung destinations, and this was before regular email, cell phones, and texting. Sometimes we didn't speak for a month while I was away, and she had no idea where I was in the world. Mom, I just have to say to you now, sorry for making you worry so much, but thank you. Thank you for setting me free. Through all her worry and caring, Mom repeated something to me over the years. She said, "One day when you have kids, you'll understand." Well, Mom, I know back then, in my 20s and even in my 30s, I brushed off your words like they were some cliché, something moms always say. But now, with my own two children, I realize how right she was. All the little bits of advice, her values, her intuition about raising children have suddenly come flooding back to me. And now they've become my go-to toolbox for raising Simon and Sasha. Thanks, Mom, because I could never be the father I am today without you. Mom never liked to be the center of attention and never sugarcoated things. She would tell you like it is, even when you didn't want to hear it. She was the perfect combination of her parents, part big cauldron with her convictions and opinions and love of sports and cooking, but also part Lillian in that she would do anything for her family, and she loved to entertain. She made sure every dinner had a candle lit or flowers on the table, something special to make it unique and memorable. In fact, her favorite time to entertain was Seafair Sunday, just like her parents. How ironic that this day would fall on the weekend of Seafair. Her favorite part of the day was watching the Blue Angels, so think of her as you watch them roar over the city in just a few hours.
Our mom was an exceptional interior designer. She had an artistic flair for every detail in the home. We've long wondered why Architectural Digest hasn't knocked on the door yet. She put great thought and effort into choosing every detail in partnership with our dad. Not only did she love to decorate inside, but she also took great pride in her garden. Every summer she would get on her hands and knees for hours to plant dozens of flowers of all types, filling the yard with color. And as a side note, I now have pictures of them all, so for next year, we'll plant them again. My mom was always an athlete from the time she was young, whether it was in ice skating, golf, volleyball, or skiing, and above all, tennis was her passion, and she was darn good at it. In fact, my family are all accomplished tennis players, and my mom very much wanted me to learn. Oh, that's for you. Just me. Oh. And Michael was supposed to be an accomplished tennis player, but it didn't quite work out. But I will say that when we did play, she was an amazing player. I don't know how she did it on the court. I don't know how she manipulated that ball around, but even me at my level, I couldn't keep up. She recently took up canasta. And because it was something she always wanted to learn to play. She had a competitive edge, but was always a gracious opponent, unless you happened to be playing rummy cue with her. Then there was no mercy. But she would get mad at me because I like to beat her on the... Sorry, Mom. Michael and I just talked about how much love she had for us. But above all, the love she had for our dad, Ron, was boundless. Modern couples are so busy, they designate a date night once or twice a month. But for our parents, every night was a date night. They always put their relationship first and protected their marriage above all else. They did everything together, and I mean everything. My dad would get up to go to the bathroom. My mom would say, "Ron, where are you going?" They went everywhere together, from their many travels to Maui, to Spain, to Israel, to going to pick up dental floss from the drugstore. Their favorite moments were relaxing on the couch or patio outside, having dinner at home together, and watching tennis matches on TV. You rarely saw them apart. The last few days, my dad has said, he feels like he's lost half his heart, half his body, half his head. They had a romantic love like no other. You would often find my dad reaching for my mom's hand, or sharing a loving glance with her across the table, or dancing cheek to cheek with her while he sang Frank Sinatra at the top of his lungs. Don't get me wrong, they bickered about the smallest things, but it was always with love and respect, and they would never go to bed angry. They weren't dependent on other people, but they were very dependent on each other. They put each other first, above all else.
What brought my mom the most happiness was being known unto her grandkids. She made the effort to spend time. She made the effort to spend time with them together and one-on-one. She loved to brag about Lily's singing voice and enjoyed spending hours doing watercolors and baking cookies with her. Mom always begged Aaron to play his latest piano piece, and she would go outside to shoot basketball hoops with him in the driveway. With my kids, Sasha and Simon, Mom had an exceptional ability to relate to them on their level. She would engage Simon for hours, often building Legos, his favorite activity. Legos, I should mention, that belonged to me. Yes, she saved those Legos for 40 plus years for her grandchildren. And with Sasha, Mom would get down on the floor and look right into her eyes and have a girl-to-girl talk, as if Sasha, who was only 2 years old, were entirely capable of having some sort of sophisticated conversation about life. But when you watch their interaction, well, it certainly appeared that some big ideas were being exchanged between them. For all this and more, Mom, we're going to miss you for many reasons. For your strength of character, your elegance, your graciousness and generosity, your loyalty, and your willingness to listen. We will carry on your legacy.
Years before. We have come to pay our last tributes to our beloved Gail Calderon Bihar, a husband, Ron, the sons, Michael, and his dear wife, Ashley, and the children, I have to mention them, Simon, Jay, and Sasha, and Jay, the son, and wife, Michelle, and the children, Lily and Aaron, just to get used to the names, because they will one day represent the beautiful qualities that Mom leaves behind. The sister Robin Calderon and Shanti, the daughter, family and many friends. Now, I know that Gail deserves a eulogy from me, a full one, and really I could talk volumes about her. And I knew her whenever I met her in a function of the synagogue, in a party, or when I visited her in her home. Her guardian angel was her beloved husband, Ron. And I never saw her on her own, and you mentioned it, both of you. She was always with him, with Ron, and they both were a unit. So I could talk a lot about her, but I also knew her very well. And I am picturing her saying to me, like she would say to me graciously when I spoke longer than I should, she would say, "Rabbi, you were excellent, you were very good. I enjoyed your sermon, but they were a little bit too long." And if you haven't made your point clear and convincing within 10 minutes, then you are talking too long or too much. This is exactly what they said, and I used to talk a lot. But he used to write to me, always. And in fact, I look forward to the letters, both Ron and Gail. After Rosh Hashanah and after Kippur, and they always tell me what they think. And I always appreciate it, because I used to get better every time because of them. And knowing how hot it is, and it will be getting even hotter later on, I am picturing and saying, "Rabbi Ben Zaken, make it snappy, make it short, otherwise the good family and friends are going to suffer with the heat." So, going through memory lane, I'll say a few things that haven't been mentioned by the children, perhaps you all know, but part of her history. Ron described how we came to be privileged to have met and married Gail, the love of his life. They were married for nearly 50 years, 2 months short of that. Ron said that he was an English guy, and we took his really, who would want that guy, you can imagine? But he did not realize that Gail's auntie Jeannie Angel and Jeannie's sister Sherry Calderon Toledo, Alea Shalom, and Ron's auntie Betty Ben Ardut, also Alea Shalom, were good friends, were already plotting to fix them together. And Jeannie said, "Why can't we fix up Ronnie with my niece Gail?" And each one called their niece and the nephew. Both said, at the beginning, no. They said, "Do it just one day." And Gail was already dating somebody, but somehow they both agreed to meet. And I think when you meet with your mind and with your thoughts and with your goodness and all the good things that you have, you know, you're like electricity sometimes. And that's what it did. They came to the house where they live now, and it was the parents, Victor and Lillian's house. And I remember when they were building that house for a long time to make it even more beautiful as it is now. Everything in the right place. And she worked for Kathy Riggs as an ad agency at the time, and he picked her up in his Buick Riviera. Those cars, I don't even know where they are now in some kind of magazine. But that must have been something special. And he said, "I have a friend who had a small plane." He said, "We're going to fly you to the San Juan, to Ross Harbor. How about that?" And knowing Gail, she said, "You crazy? I am not flying in a little tiny plane." But Ron well said, "Then we will take you to the..." What other choice? The Blue Dolphin instead. He was talking about the restaurant in Belgium. Yeah. So once he was driving, I'm not going to say that part. But the fact is that they click no matter whatever was around them. And even if his ex-girlfriend honked at him while Gail was in the car with him, and even though it was embarrassing, Ron said, but it was worth it. And that's what matters. Ron said, after our first date, I knew that if I married again, which was unlikely, she would be the one. And in fact, that's for nearly 50 years. He went back to England and he told his family, told them about Gail. And, you know, like an Englishman, they always look with the approval of the family. That's what's normal. And while he was in England, went on a trip to Israel in 1967. He was privileged to be there. And it was the 1967 war as well, and the victory. And when he came back, it was about July or August in 1967, but he said that he took her into what was the living room and he proposed. And they got married on November 26, 1967, and that was the 2 months shy of their 50th anniversary. He was 33 and Gail was 23. Must have been a love connection. Michelle has described, and the same as Jay was saying, that they were such close-knit couple. And I was impressed with the words that Ron expressed himself, because it was mentioned, but he said she was part of me. She was half of me. And when half of you is not there, you get diminished. And, you know, we people, we think we are here for life. We're going to go the same way. Some earlier, some a little bit late. But what matters is how much love you imbue into other people and how much you contribute to the welfare of other people, and what you do, whether if they are a family, whether if they are friends, or whether if they are somebody that you met and you do a kindness, that's what matters. And this was what together they had. And that's why it is so hard and so difficult to come to any realization. It's going to take time even to think how you're here today, and just in the same day you are not anymore. This was that romantic love that they had together. Had a wonderful life. They would go to Maui and travel a lot together. Whether if it is to go to book with a golf club, or whether it is a tennis club, you both were busy in the things that you love to do together, and you did that. Very important, that's keep constant communication. And whatever you do with your spouse, whatever you do with your other, if you are doing together, you are communicating. And that's what's love. And you had a lot of that. I always felt, as a rabbi, when I saw you both, I really had such a great feeling, because not only you were part, when I see you in the synagogue or wherever it is, it just you both exude exactly that. what you like to see in people, always happy, always, in spite of around you whatever was happening, giving to each other. I wanted to just mention what Robin said, how she described, because you know I'm an artist and I know and appreciate art and appreciate what an artist that she was. Mind you, in the gene of the Calderon, you can see everywhere art. She said, Gail was my role model because she was truly the artist in this family. She could paint, she could draw. Her bedroom was always beautiful. I wanted to be like her. I went to art school because I wanted to be an artist, because Gail was an artist. Everywhere you look in this home is a testament to her creativity and her beauty. And this is an amazing home that she created. It's really a work of art. And this is where we grew up, and we grew up with style. The home was designed by Paul Clark, a famous architect, and they had Jotchik screens. And when they moved in here, they took it to the next level. There isn't a plant or tree that doesn't reflect the artistic creativity she had. That was her soul, her spirit. And when you can buy a bonsai tree and is there for 48 years and you see something wrong with it and you take it to the doctor, I mean not her going to the doctor, the bonsai is going to the doctor and then exactly revive it again, it says something about how you look at life and nature as well. Gail's grandfather that we know and we admire in our community, because he started our community and our synagogue, John Calderon, Alava Shalom, started our synagogue, Sephardi B'Kol Cholim, and I learned stories that he would go to the Pushka going to make sure that's what the building that we have, that's what everything that we have there. And you might not know, but Aaron Cohen Ben Ardut, yes, that was also Ron's grandfather, Rabbi Shalom. He started a synagogue in London, Holland Park, where my brother was a rabbi there too. And that's how we got connected. When they were kids, Jack and Rita Calderon and Vika Lillian Calderon lived next door to each other. This is the structure of our family, of community that we lived in, because that says it all as an example for everybody in our community. Why our community is so unique and so special. Vic and Lillian Calderon live next door to each other. Gail and Robin are Vic and Lillian's kids, and Marlene, Lynn and Jackie are Jack's and Rita's kids, and right down the street lives Auntie Jean and Auntie Jerry and their Sherry and their parents, John and Matilda Calderon, all of them living together. Jack and Rita were like Gail and Robin's parents, and there was no difference. They were one family. That's what is so important in our community. We care. We are family. Very strong bonds. The kids always had to be quiet because Vic would go to bed right after dinner. It shows you ethics of work. Because you woke up at 3:30 or 4 a.m. to go to work. Meanwhile, Jack had a night shift, so he would sleep on the couch during the day and they would have barbecue all summer long together. That's how you connect, my friend, a family. It would make all of the goodies that you can think of. Maybe you make salad with watermelon, I don't know that dish, but it must be great. And the girl would play marbles and roller skates. Play marbles? What are you talking about? I'm thinking now these days, our children are just doing this. Play with the marbles. But you know, you are creative. And then we drew circles on the rack and were obsessed with a Marvel game we came up with. And it was something very free. We walked to school through the woods alone, the left side, it was that safe. And they always, most probably, it is stuck in their mind. Because the neighbor was Dr. Barnas, our doctor. And his three girls, Marianne, Linda, and Vivian, and Robin's best friend, Lynn Burns Lim. In Kitty Corner, Gail's best friend was her cousin, Lynn. I'm not going to say anymore, but what I would like to just say, we are going to miss Gail. This is really a shock to our system. And Ron, it's very difficult, you know, to give comfort when you have got your partner here. But you have to know, you did your part. We left in the last moment, the last minute. That way you have to feel good. And now your children, they need to love you double. Everything that they directed to her, it's going to be to you. And the children have been wonderful, wherever they are. But I always remember, you tell me stories, whether it is Michael, where he is in Colorado, where he's going to be, and what he was doing, a journalist. You see that? Good job what they did. Is that a journalist? And Jerry, their wife, we pray that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, God Almighty, keep the rest of your family strong and powerful and live with the beautiful life that she lived and all those wonderful memories that you have from her. Erech Matat Rabbi Torah Chaim Betanel, and it's all divine love in the bond of life eternal. Now, if I may ask you all, we can write for a memory of prayer.